Chapter 19.
Ben, I'm so very sorry. You'll hate me if I don't send you this, and you'll hate me when you hear it anyway, so better that you have the evidence than not. It's going to be hard to listen to, my friend, like recorded interviews with suspects often are. Their reasons for what they do, well, they make sense to them. That's all I can say. I can tell you that it took everything I had to keep my reactions under some sort of control. Here's the bad news before you play the recording. His factual account of what went on at Cavan matches the physical evidence. Call me if you need anything else. I'm always here for you. Captain Lon Chevu, GAG, in an encrypted comm to Ben Skywalker, following an interview with the suspect. Former Imperial Outpost, Endor. Ben had spent an hour working himself up to playing the holorecording Lon Chevu had risked his life to get. Han and Leia had found a new, safer location for the Jedi base. Now Ben stood in the center of the stark room that had been his quarters, all the fixtures and equipment crated for the pullout from Endor. The rickety folding chair had gone. He was sleeping on a GAG issue bedroll, with just his mess tin to eat from and a basic hygiene kit. But sitting on a comfortable seat wouldn't have changed a thing. Sooner or later, he would have to move off that spot. He'd have to walk down the dusty passage, picked clean of anything that might be a clue to where the Jedi Resistance had gone, and say to his father, uncle, and aunt that he had things he needed to show them.
"Here's Jason, Dad. Here's Jason telling my buddy how he killed Mom, and why he had to do it, and why he isn't a bad guy."
Ben willed himself to move. It wasn't that he couldn't, not like some weird psychiatric paralysis, but he knew that the moment he shifted his weight and began walking, the short journey would end with showing his family, his poor dad, that awful, awful conversation between Jason and Chevu. The image wasn't good because Chevu had been forced to use a holocam with an aperture like a pinhead, just so it would sit on his tunic unnoticed. The sound was perfect, though. Chevu risked wearing the wire, as he called it, because Jason was so used to GAG officers carrying surveillance kits that nothing like that struck him as unusual. Ironic. The Jedi danger senses that Jason had, the ability to sense weapons and threats, had proved pretty useless to him in the end, because he was constantly surrounded by war and deceit, saturated in it. He'd grown too used to it all as background noise to be filtered out. "Do I wish I'd killed him now? He wouldn't have been able to spew out this garbage to Lon about his duty and how much he cares about the galaxy. So just as well I didn't." Ben checked himself. When he had thoughts like that, and bile literally rose in his throat, he concentrated on his father and asked if he thought ugly thoughts. It did the trick, usually. Ben forced himself to pass beyond impotent, furious grief.
"Move. Now."
Ben walked. He went to find his father first. On the lower floors, the local Ewok tribe had hauled in temporary furniture so the Jedi and their support staff could have some creature comforts while they waited for the final preparations to be completed. Ben found Jag and Zek in the former briefing room, with their boots up on a rough plank table about knee-high, chatting in dejected tones.
"Hi, Ben." Jag gestured to the seat next to him. "You coming in or what? Are you all right?"
"No, he's not all right," Zek said. "I could feel him seething two floors up." Ben needed to take a run at it if he was going to do it at all.
"No offense, guys, but can you leave? Please?"
Yeah, but are you sure we can't help?
Zek sat up straight and shuffled himself to the edge of the seat.
Whatever it is?
Actually, you could go find Dad, Uncle Han, and Aunt Leia for me. Tell them I've got stuff to show them, and they all need to see it together.
He thought of Jaina, a little later than he should have done.
And Jag, can you try to get hold of Jaina? I need to set up a comm so she can hear and see what I show everyone else.
Both men shut up right away. There was no more gentle ribbing for Ben these last few days, no attempt to play older brother when he looked so ground down by events. They responded to his officer voice, as Jory LeCalf had called it, and knew he was serious.
Jory didn't have to die either. He didn't, Jason. You made me carry out the Gedgen assassination to make me just like you, and Jory was only some detail, one of the small people.
Ben didn't want anyone else dying for him.
All this, all over me?
He set up a table so he could lay out evidence on it and stand the comlink where it could best transmit the session to Jaina. He simply couldn't face having to repeat it to her. Everyone would think he was doing things by the book, and presenting the same case to everyone like a professional would. But the real reason was that he could only hold it together long enough to do this once. He could hear Leia's voice getting closer outside, saying how it would be handy for seeing more of Alana, which he took to mean the new location for the base. When she walked through the door, she stopped in her tracks for a second. Han nearly piled into the back of her.
"Hey, sweetheart," she said. "Whatever it is, we're all here, and we're going to listen to you carefully, okay?"
"It's not me talking," Ben said. "The evidence can do that." Han, hands on hips, blew out a breath, then walked up and hugged Ben with one arm in that half-embarrassed male way. Luke came in a few minutes later, with his hair disheveled as if he'd been running. Ben shunted the data pads around the tabletop.
"Plenty of time, Dad," he said quietly.
"Just waiting for Jag to track down Jaina and get a stable comm connection. Then we'll start." It struck Ben that he'd just pointed Jag at the Jaina issue, and never thought what Zek might feel about it.
"Take a seat."
He couldn't turn and face them all yet, so he must have shuffled those pads and charts a dozen pointless times before Jag came back brandishing a live comlink. He set it down where Ben showed him.
"Can you see all this, Jaina?"
Ben said. She looked as if she was standing in a storage room. Behind her, the walls were covered with shelves loaded with cans and boxes, and the doors were slightly parted. Noisy conversation and the clinking of metal and transparasteel wafted through. A restaurant, maybe.
"I can see all of you and the table," she said.
"Okay."
Ben had to warn them.
"This isn't easy to hear. I'm going to show you the physical evidence first, and then a recorded conversation. I'm going to show you things that link Jason to Mom's death, and then what he told Captain Shevu about it. Remember that folks sometimes confess to things they haven't done to look tough or to get attention. So compare the physical evidence with what Jason says so you're sure what's true. I'm not going to say what I think. I'll just show you what I've got."
Ben took a breath. Oddly, it was easier from this point than he had expected. Using the data pads and projecting the images onto the screen they used for small holocharts, he showed them a copy of the GAG Stealth X log that proved when Jason had left Coruscant, and when he'd returned the vessel to the hangar. He showed them the logs for Mom's flight. He showed them the charts, with Mom's known movements in Hapen space provided by Hapen ATC, and Tenel Ka's note confirming when Jason had arrived at the palace and then left. He showed the forensics droid, cracked open, and explained how he and Shevu had used it to collect trace evidence from Jason's Stealth X. When Ben got to the data about his mother's blood-contaminated hair, he caught his father's eye, after managing to avoid it so far, and then he nearly wavered. "The locket. I've still got it. Dad needs that back." But Ben carried on. Through the recordings he'd made at Cavan showing Mom's body and the surrounding crime scene, to his own brief, detached statement that Jason Solo had found his exact location, even though he had no beacon, made no comms, and was shut down in the force. Then he played the conversation between Shevu and Jason, and sat back in silence. He couldn't watch this time, and just stared into his lap at his clasped hands, hearing Uncle Han inhaling every so often, as if he was about to cough. When he risked a quick glance at Dad and Aunt Leia, both of them had adopted the same posture, right arm across the waist, right hand cupping the left elbow, left hand loosely held to lips. The recording ended. Nobody said anything for a while. It was Jaina who jerked them out of it.
"Ben," she said softly. "Ben, can you transmit that recording to me now, please? I need some time to study it."
"Yeah, sure. Sure." It was an excuse to stand up and occupy his hands while he thought of something to say. Aunt Leia, always the one who said the perfect thing at the perfect time and got everyone organized in a crisis, walked up to him, turned him around slowly by his shoulders, and just held him in silence. When she drew back, there were tears in her eyes. Ben had never seen her cry before.
"Thanks, Ben," she said. "You did a good job, and you did it right."
Ben hung on long enough to send Jaina the recording, and then just had to get outside. He scrambled up one of the nearest trees to a platform that had been part of an Ewok walkway into the forest, and sat with his legs dangling, staring out into the haze over the valley. Whether it was a few minutes later or much longer, Ben couldn't remember, but he heard someone climbing the creaking ladder of twisted vines. Then his dad sat down next to him, letting his legs hang over the edge of the platform too, but with a little less ease, as if his knees were stiff. Ben leaned against his shoulder. They ended up propped against each other, just looking out across the forested slope and watching the day run out of things to say to itself. They didn't talk, either. There was nothing to add, and both of them no longer needed words anyway. It was a flame and garnet sunset, spectacular even by Endor's standards. Bralson, near Keldabe, Fen Shisa's memorial. Jaina knew she should have calmed Fett and told him she was going to be late for their training session. He'd be annoyed. He never got angry, but his annoyance was bad enough, and she was professional enough to get a grip, however bad the news, and simply tell him she might be a little distracted today. Instead, she ended up here, under Fen Shisa's imagined scrutiny, cross-legged on the turf, with a data pad playing a nightmare in her lap. She replayed Jason's sweetly rational, polite explanation of why people had to die half a dozen times before she found that she didn't get a pang of recognition when she saw his face, and his words sounded like an alien language, in the way that all words did when you repeated them incessantly.
"He did it. He really did."
"Shisa was always a magnet for the ladies," said the voice she was dreading. "He's got better luck dead than I have alive."
Jaina didn't look up. At least it was some kind of humor, not a dressing down at a time when she wasn't really up to one. Bursting into tears in front of Fett was out of the question.
"Sorry, Fett. Should have calmed you."
"I had wasted time to my invoice."
He squatted back on his heels, with his arms loosely folded on his knees. It seemed to be a comfortable way of sitting in armor. Jaina wanted to explain what had made her bolt up here for solitude, but showing Fett the recording was probably the quickest and easiest way of getting the message across. Was she betraying her family by showing him the Solo's lowest ebb? Would he gloat? She wasn't sure how she'd react if he did. Right now she was just as raw and emotionally devastated as if Jason had died. Her Jason had, of course.
"Before I show you this," she said, holding the pad out to Fett, "it's going to make you mad, because it's my brother. And however callous you look, you've got to be devastated by Aelin's murder."
Fett took the datapad and thumbed the controls.
"First time anyone's called it that."
"Clear cut. Unarmed prisoner."
"Unarmed interrogator."
"Don't go all reasonable on me. Jason killed your daughter."
"I don't do reasonable. Sure you want me to see this?"
Jaina hadn't expected that consideration. But maybe he was even more unfeeling than she thought. Gloating took some emotional attachment. Even his lifetime of Jedi hunting seemed to lack the passion and triumph of full-blooded vengeance.
"Yes," she said. "Tell me what you see. And remember that what he says is corroborated by forensics."
"Jason telling the truth? Well, well."
Fett's tilt of the head suggested he was mulling it over. Then he flicked the key and squatted absolutely motionless while the conversation played. When it ended, he didn't move. Jaina waited for a reaction.
"Well?"
"What do you want to know?"
Fett said.
"Whether he's crazy? Whether he's better dead or locked up?"
"Anything."
Suddenly, Jaina almost slapped her hand to her mouth, appalled by her own lapse of judgment. Shevu was easy to identify as the man who'd set Jason up. Stang, she really wasn't on top form today.
"You know the officer risked his life to get that."
"I know how to keep my mouth shut. You should have noticed by now."
Fett still seemed to gaze at the static image on the small holoscreen, although it was hard to tell with a man in a helmet. He could have been talking on his internal comlink, for all she knew, because they could switch in and out of audio channels in those sealed buchese literally in the blink of an eye. But she guessed he was chewing something over that bothered him.
"Here's what I see,"
he said.
"A sane man. Because they all slide down that path when they get power. And then they have to tell themselves lies to explain how they got there and how it wasn't their fault. That's when reality becomes a stranger to them. And there's you, ashamed of yourself because you're thinking that maybe Mara Skywalker started the ruck. But you want to see her as some uncomplicated, completely innocent victim."
Jaina knew it was true because it hurt so much.
"And?"
"That's a Barv who nearly got his backside handed to him by Skywalker's wife. He still looks scared when he remembers it, because she went at him like a maniac, just like Bevin showed you."
It was the most she'd heard him say in one conversation. He'd need to shut up for a couple of years now to even out his average word count. Jaina was smart enough to recognize uncomfortable truth, though, and began unpicking all the implications in what he'd said. For a man who didn't seem to have a heart or any normal emotions, he knew plenty about everyone else's. It could have been just the sharp eye of a hunter, or he might have felt things more keenly than he let on. Jaina bet on the latter.
Yes, I didn't want to think Jason killed Mara, but if he did, I wanted him to be completely to blame, she said.
Mara didn't ask for it.
Fett put his arm out behind him and shifted into a proper sitting position, legs stretched.
She just went to do some necessary pest control. She nearly succeeded.
You're saying he needs... that I have to kill him?
It's not that simple.
Why haven't you ever gone after him personally? Why did you tell your men to leave him for me?
Because if I put him down like the vermin deserves, your family can blame that rotten Boba Fett again when the truth wears off, when you need an excuse to stop feeling bad about what you had to do. No, you clear up your own mess. I wondered, am I standing back to let the Solos and Skywalkers fight each other because I want them to suffer? No. It's only Jason who deserves it. And on balance, I'd prefer to see him live a long time in a lot of pain. Like I've said before, he's no use to me dead.
Jaina tried to work out if she was on the receiving end of a subtle gloating lecture from Fett, or if he'd brooded about this long enough to have a lot of words looking for an outlet. Even her force senses strained to pick up clues. He really did seem to be thinking aloud, trying to find some answers. Jaina felt suddenly irrelevant.
You can manage quite long sentences, can't you?
It's all billable time, Solo.
You hate Jedi. I understand that. Seeing your father killed... having to survive on your own...
No, you don't get it. But if any of your kind could, it'd be you.
Fett put his weight on one arm and jumped to his feet, looking pretty fit for his age. He walked off down the slope toward Caldabe and didn't look back. With the 360-degree sensor in his HUD, he didn't need to. Jaina wasn't sure she'd had an answer at all, but she had a stack of extra questions. She broke her own rule and scrambled after him.
Hey, don't give me the cryptic treatment, Fett.
Jaina reached up from behind for his right shoulder, and a little force pull made him turn. That probably didn't help, given the topic.
Jedi killed your father. You hunted mine. I went on hating you and feeling pretty unfriendly about Mandalorians for a long time. We all do it.
I'm trying to keep this simple.
What?
Mace Windu killed Dad. The Barv ends up taking a walk out Palpatine's window, so I don't get to blow his brains out. Add a few years of lashing out at any Jedi, and then I stop and ask why I carry on. Because Force users are all trouble. Sith, Jedi, no difference. Although the Sith always paid well. Every big war since the Old Republic, apart from the Vong, has been about you two having your sectarian conflicts and dragging everyone else in. I say it. Guys like Venku say it. And then folks start thinking that maybe galactic peace doesn't include you.
You'd starve if you didn't have a war to go to.
Making virtue out of necessity.
and we are peacekeepers. You can't always do that by appealing to folks' better nature.
Yeah, I forgot. The compassionate Jedi.
He held out his palm.
Give me your lightsaber. I left all mine at home.
Why?
Give.
Jaina took the hilt off her belt, and thought that only a Jedi who put excessive faith in her Force certainties would hand a lightsaber to an irritated Fett. He snapped the blade casually into life. He'd handled the weapons more than he admitted. That was clear, and sliced the humming beam clean through the branch of a small tree. Then he shut it off, tossed the hilt back to her, and bent to grab the severed wood.
A weapon for a civilized age, you reckon?
Fett thrust the end of the branch into her face so she could see it was a clean cut, not a lot of sap.
You cut someone's head off. You trap enough oxygenated blood in the brain for 2 minutes consciousness, maybe. Then go and retrieve your dad's body parts and see how well you sleep some nights.
Fett walked away again, and this time Jaina let him go. It was a little while before she recovered enough to think of yelling after him to demand how many of his kills had been instantaneous, but that was probably for the best. One moment she was close to thinking they had a good understanding, the next it was war again. Was this his plan all along? To set her up to harm her own brother, so the most powerful Jedi families could tear themselves apart?
You can go crazy thinking like this. He's just a man. It's your own brother who's plotting and planning.
Fett hadn't planned to see his daughter getting killed, and he hadn't known Jaina was going to show up asking him to make her a Jedi hunter. He was an injured but dangerous bystander, landing a punch any way he could.
Okay, Jason. Would you think twice about killing me if I got in your way like Mara did?
Jaina thought she knew the answer, but the next minute she doubted herself. Combat training was definitely out for the day. She decided to use the downtime to try building bridges with another Mandalorian who probably didn't want to talk to her. Gotob, or whatever his name had been when he'd still used a lightsaber. It must have been a very hard life for him. He must have been mad to choose it. Or desperate. Maybe the last place anyone would look for a Jedi was in the middle of hostile country like this. Bevin Vassar Farm, near Keldabe.
Myrta, where have you been?
Sintas asked.
Been on a job, Babuir.
Fett watched Sintas making her way competently around the room, navigating by touch. Watching her when she couldn't see him made him uncomfortable now. He was predatory, intruding. He wanted more than anything to do what was right for her, but he was going around in circles. She located Myrta, and the two women hugged.
What job, sweetheart? We seized an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Sintas parted her lips slightly, then laughed.
Oh, just a little job. Nobody hurt. Loads of people. But not us. I can remember how to strip down a blaster. You were a bounty hunter, Babuir. I can recall chasing a man who had something I wanted back. A metal box. I'd better remember how I did it if I want to earn a living again.
Watching Sintas desperately grabbing at scraps of her life and trying to build herself back into a whole woman made Fett feel scared and dirty. It reminded him that he'd failed in every aspect of living except his job. Except killing people. It wasn't the killing that bothered him. It was the failing. and not being like his dad. Jango Fett had taught him how to be a perfect soldier, but he'd also shown him by example how to be the ideal father. He'd managed one out of two.
"Sin," he said, "you never have to worry about scraping a living again. I owe you credits. A lot. I'm paying up."
Sintas felt her way toward him. She was going to touch him. He could see it coming, and he dreaded it, because it was going to bring it all back. Not just the memories that were better left forgotten, but the way it felt to touch her, because that part of his life was dead and buried.
"You left her."
She found his hand and took it.
"I know I must have married you for a good reason. And whatever went wrong, you still seem like a good man."
"Sin, there's some more bad news you need to know."
She still had a grip on his hand. He'd seen her at her best and worst, although she'd never seen the best of him, and he never got over how beautiful she always was, whatever the circumstances. He needed her to let go of his hand, but he didn't want her to. There was nothing salvageable in the relationship, and he didn't even want to hear himself think, "if only."
"Imagine if you'd both been happy when she went missing, though. Imagine pining all those years, getting her back so many years later, and then having to face the separation of age, that she couldn't want you again, even if she tried."
Yes, it was better this way, if it had to happen at all.
"I can feel some of the things in the Heart of Fire," she said, "but I can't make sense of it."
"Okay. Sit down."
He steered her to a chair. Myrta watched as if she was waiting to pounce on any mistake.
"Our daughter died."
Sintas took the news with a few blinks. It was a while before she spoke again.
"I feel bad that I can't remember enough about her. What happened to her? She must have been an adult, because Myrta's here."
It was a guessing game, and Fett hated those at the best of times.
"I'm going to get it all over with now, or I'll just be giving you a fresh bit of misery every day," he said. "Or maybe it's because I need to blurt and run. She was killed, Sin. She was a bounty hunter. She blamed me for you going missing on a job, because I should have been there to look after you both. She stalked me for years, and she tried to kill me. But she got picked up by the secret police on Coruscant, and she died under interrogation. She was 53 or 54, I think. And that's about it. Except she raised Myrta to hate me too. And Myrta tried to kill me. But we got that out of our systems."
Myrta was as tough as they came. She just stood there, and the expression on her face was acceptance. The boil was lanced. Sintas did a reasonable job of controlling the shock, but her lips moved silently as she tried framing a question and failed for a few moments. The anguished expression in her eyes was all the worse for the fact that Fett knew she couldn't even see their expressions.
"Regret, guilt, pain, anger. That's what you're missing, Sin. But I bet you can imagine it well enough."
"The Barv who killed my girl! Where is he? Is he still alive? I'll fix that!"
Sintas burst in anger. Maybe it was all so terrible and alien that she was too shocked to cry, and Fett knew it was better to act rather than feel.
"And how could you want to kill your own grandfather, Myrta? You didn't even know him!"
Life was unraveling again. Fett had tried to do it right and take the blame as he deserved, and now it was spinning off like a broken rotor and hitting Myrta, who'd stuck by her mother through thick and thin. Fett felt that his whole life had been about others taking the shrapnel from the blasts he caused.
"Don't blame her, Sin," he said. "Whether Aelin knew it or not, she was right to loathe me. The only good news is that I'm a rich old man now, and you're still young, so I can pay, and you can do some living."
That was his emotional limit. He'd hit the end stop today. If he'd been like Bevin, all heart and pure courage, unafraid of love or the risk of being hurt by it, he'd have held Sintas and told her all the little details that would have softened the blow and made more sense of it once the shock wore off. But he wasn't Bevin, nowhere near. He almost got the whole thing off his chest and told her why they'd split up, but he lost his nerve. There was a limit to how much Osick could hit the fan, after all.
"I'll see you later," he said. "I think we can find a special doctor to get your memory back, and maybe your sight."
Sintas had her hand to her mouth now, in a kind of slow-burn horror.
"Well, at least I'll be ready for it."
"I'm sorry."
She rubbed her eyes.
"I'm sorry too, Bo."
She didn't even seem to realize she'd said it. Bo. It was what she'd always called him.
"Go on," Myrta said. "You've got things to do. I'll sit here a while."
Fett tried to calculate how many hours he'd spent with Sintas since she'd been revived, and it probably didn't add up to a full day. No, it wouldn't be any different this time, even if the years they'd lost were magically erased. He couldn't face spending time with people. As he slipped out of the farmhouse, Bevin was sawing planks in the front yard. "How's it going?" he asked, looking as if he knew anyway.
"Bad. Could be worse."
This was Bevin's home, and somehow Fett filled it with the detritus of his own disastrous life, and Bevin never complained. The man found room for Fett's damaged ex-wife and a passing Jedi whose family was pretty well as screwed as Fett's now. He had to ask, or else it'd look as if he was the only person who didn't realize that Bevin had saved him time after time.
"Why do you bail me out all the time, Goron? And don't say it's because it's duty to the Mandalore."
"Because nobody can live the way you do, and not notice how much it hurts."
Bevin carried on sawing.
"I suppose it's me being grateful for not being that way."
Bevin never pulled his punches.
"I don't understand why any of you do it,"
Fett said.
"Shisa, Spar, why didn't they say Fett doesn't care? Why should I do anything for him? I didn't even know Spar."
"I hear Spar did it for Shisa, actually, because he told him Mandalore needed to look strong and stable to the outside world, like the Fets were back."
Fett never kidded himself it was because of his lovable personality. He had his uses, but then that was how he treated everyone else, so he had nothing to complain about. And problems went away if you threw enough credits at them. Buy an assassin, a bounty hunter, or someone to look after your neglected wife. The only one that wouldn't go away with a good dose of creds was time. But Myrta was right. He had things to do, and if he didn't, he'd find some. He strode back to Slave One, opened the comm, and called his broker. They said the man could acquire anything. He could prove it, then, by finding the biggest blue Heart of Fire gem on the market, the rarest and costliest of gems. Oyubat Tapcalf, Keldabe.
They said you wanted to see me, Jedi.
Jaina looked up. She'd felt him coming anyway. Gotab left a very distinctive impression in the Force. Venku, always hovering close to support the old man if he faltered, was a dim light next to him. They were both edgy and a little hostile.
I do, Gotab, she said, and stood to pull up a chair for him.
Chom the barkeep lined up ales.
And you, Venku, please sit down.
Both men lifted off their helmets. She could see Fett reflected clearly in Venku, now that she was so familiar with that face. The mouth was different, but this was definitely Fett's genetic material. She'd learned fast not to call it family.
You want something from me, Gotab said. Spit it out.
You're a healer. Am I right?
He pulled off both gauntlets, revealing age-spotted, veined hands, and held them up.
Yes, I did a lot of healing. I look even older than I already am, don't I? Drains you, healing.
How many folks here know you're a Jedi?
I used to be a Jedi,
he said quietly.
I left the Order 60 years ago and became a Mondoad. But I suppose I'm pretty easy to spot for someone strong in the Force like you.
What about you, then, Venku?
They still hadn't said whether anyone knew what they were.
You're harder to pin down, but you can use the Force, can't you?
I can, Venku said, but I avoid it.
So who knows? Nobody, I bet. Are you scared even now? Come on. I know what it's like to be a Jedi and walk into a cantina full of Mondos.
Why do you care?
Gotab said.
In case it has serious consequences for you, of course.
Venku and Gotab looked at each other as if in some unspoken debate. Venku sighed and shook his head. Buir, he said, if you want to come clean after all these years, and any Mondoad so much as looks at you the wrong way, you know I'd kill them. After all you've done for Mandalore, nobody can call you Jaitu.
And what about you, Kataka?
I'm not that much use to the Kaminoans now. Gotab snorted.
Fett would still sell you.
Jaina realized she'd hit a few nerves. And now Fett's name had been mentioned, she knew she would hit a few more.
So you don't like Fett? She said.
Gotab shrugged.
He's completely amoral. He cared nothing for Mandalore when we were occupied by the Empire.
I'm missing something here, Gotab, so let me tell you what I'm asking for.
Jaina was surprised to feel an urge to defend Fett. He wasn't completely without morals. He had principles, all right, pretty rigid ones, but they didn't fit a lot of folks' idea of ethics.
Fett's ex-wife, Sintas. She was stored in carbonite for over 30 years, and now she's blind and suffering from amnesia. I was hoping you might be able to heal her. She's done well to recover as far as she has, but there's not much more that doctors can do.
You sure she wants to remember being married to Fett?
he asked. It was probably a random insult, but maybe Gotob knew that their past was a messy one.
He thinks it's fairer if she knows everything, so she can make better decisions about her future.
Gotob leaned back in his seat and looked at Venku as if they'd had a bet on something.
Well, I've lived to see a lot of unexpected things, but Fett growing a conscience, Hwa-e.
Venku took one of the glasses of Natrigal, the sticky sweet black ale, and stared into it.
You probably guessed that we have misgivings about Fett, although he's lived up to more of his responsibilities as Mandalore lately.
So you wouldn't help his ex-wife?
Will it help her?
Well, staying blind and not recalling much of your past, not even your own kid, doesn't sound a better deal than finding out what a scumbag your husband might have been.
Jaina was getting impatient. She needed to know if exposing the two men as Jedi would end in trouble.
And if your neighbors know what you are, will you have to go into hiding?
The doors parted, and Carid came in with a couple of other men, laughing loudly. He waved to Jaina as if she were just another regular. She couldn't imagine him coming after this frail old man and harming him for once having been a Jedi. If Gotob had been here for 60 years, then he must have known that Mandalorians, however violent and uncompromising, tended not to blame folks for who their parents or brothers were. On Mandalore, you could erase your past.
It's going to come as a shock to Fett, for a start, said Venku. But maybe it's time, because even if anyone knew and wanted to exploit it, they'd have to take me first, and I don't come from a family of pushovers.
Look, just tell me.
60 years was a long time to sit on a secret that big. It grew to be a habit, and then it probably became unthinkable to imagine naming it. Jaina knew the size of the secrets in her own family, the ones about her grandfather. The longer she spent with Fett and the Mandalorians, the more she saw of how parallel their lives were in so many ways, and she wondered how much of that had fueled the animosity.
I was a Jedi general in the Clone Wars, Gotob said at last. I left the Order because I couldn't stomach how we talked about compassion, and then turned a blind eye to using human clones for our slave army. The clones I served with were my brothers. I helped them escape. I healed them. I did whatever I could to atone for the wrong that Jedi did those men. And Venku, Kadika, his mother was a Jedi, and his father was a clone soldier. We hid from the Empire for years, because they could have bred a whole new clone army from him. We hid so well that not even Fett's fixer, that Bevine, knew who we were, or even what our true clan name was.
It didn't answer the question about Fett, but Jaina felt she'd pushed it as far as she could go. Living in fear and secrecy bred a certain paranoia.
So, would you do it for Sintas Vel?
Healing's hard work, Venku said. Look what it's done to him.
Fett would pay, and if he wouldn't, I would.
Gotob nodded as if she'd confirmed something.
Well, your brother killed her daughter. It's the least you can do.
Was there anyone here who didn't know every sordid detail of her family's troubles?
But I don't want your credits or Fett's. I'll do it because I can. It's wrong to refuse, just because the poor woman used to be married to Fett.
It was a breakthrough. She's at Bevine's farm.
They're not going to think we're Kiffar anymore. Are they?
Said Gotab. No, but nobody's persecuting Jedi these days. It's not like the Purge.
Venku hadn't drunk much of his ale, and Gotab hadn't even touched his. Venku stood up, making it clear the meeting was over.
That would explain why the Jedi Council has fled from Coruscant, he said. Because it's totally okay to be a Jedi now.
They didn't miss much, even if they did live in the wilds. And wilds here must have been seriously isolated.
You're not a Jedi, though, Jaina said. You were never trained.
No, and I'm all for keeping Jedi away from government. And Sith, of course. But I'll still always be a Force-sensitive, however hard I try not to be. And that won't always sit well with folks if they know about it. They think you mess with their minds.
Jaina wanted to press a credit chip into Gotab's hand, because he needed to eat as much as anyone, but she didn't know how he'd react. She went back to the farm and spent the rest of the daylight hours overhauling Bevine's harvester droid and composing endless messages to Jag in her head. But when she got to the point of committing anything to the datapad, it all seemed like too much to tell him. In the end, she avoided calming him or her parents, and just sent a message to all of them saying everything was fine, and that she'd be in touch soon, and that flying a Besulik was a lot of fun. They'd all seen Jason's confession. Fine and fun didn't come into it. She felt guilty for expressing such trivial sentiments. Sometimes, though, life needed the illusion that ordinary pleasures still existed and could be found again even after the depths of misery. That evening, while she was eating dinner with Bevine's family and making Shalk and Brila giggle by moving their plates with a force push, she felt Gotab and Venku approaching the farmhouse.
Bevine,
she said, trying not to say it in front of the kids.
It's Gotab. He's the one who's going to be doing the healing. He's a Jedi. He used to be, anyway. Don't punish him, please. He's been one of you for nearly 60 years.
Bevine and Medrit looked at each other, and it was obvious that Fett's fixer, as Gotab called Bevine, was clearly rattled that a secret of that magnitude had eluded him. He chewed thoughtfully, gaze fixed on the pot of calf on the table.
"We won't even tell Fett it's him, if he's that scared," he said at last. "Well, fancy that. The JT throwing his lot in with us. Puts Venku in an interesting context, though."
Much as Jaina liked Bevine, she didn't think he needed to know that Venku was the son of a Jedi. If Venku wanted anyone to know, he could tell them himself. She'd already gone far enough. She smiled as best she could.
"Gotab's a healer, remember? Maybe Venku owes him an old debt of honor."
It was probably true. It was true enough for her not to feel guilty about saying it. Bevine got up to let Gotab in, and Medrit gave Jaina a knowing look. Dinua and Jintar distracted the kids.
"We'd always heard rumors," Medrit said. "Never thought it was Gotab, though."
Jaina wished she'd thought ahead a little more and moved Sintas to the Oyubat for the healing session.
"I'm sure he's paid his debt to society."
"He didn't have a choice to be a Jedi, did he?"
"No, but he chose to be one of you."
Then the matter's closed,
Medrit said. Shalk stared at him in the way that only a voraciously curious child could when he thought the grown-ups were talking secrets.
And that makes Jang Skirata one of his clan, which is even more interesting.
Gotob edged into the room with Venku looming over him like a bodyguard, and the two children stared at him. They didn't say a word. Gotob nodded politely and followed Jaina into Sintas's room.
So, do you work miracles?
Sintas asked, turning her head towards him.
I could do with one.
You can still say no, Gotob said. You know you have tragedy in your past.
Sintas, amnesiac or not, showed a streak of tough resolve that must have stood her in good stead as a bounty hunter.
Then I'll face it,
she said,
because it's part of who I am.
Jaina suddenly felt pity for the whole Fett clan, imagining what it might be like to lose Jag and then find him again when she was too old and their bond was too damaged. Nothing could put Fett's family right. Myrta's children would be the first to grow up with a chance of ordinary happiness. It was a wake-up call for Jaina, too.
Stay, Gotob said to her. Just in case we need a little extra force help.
Force healing was low-key and tedious for a spectator. Gotob sat on the edge of Sintas's bed and placed both hands gently on her head. Even for Jaina, used to meditation, 2 hours of sitting with relative strangers and saying nothing was a trial.
Oh, Sintas said at one point. Oh, that's odd.
Gotob smiled. It transformed him.
I've healed brain injuries before, and my patients tell me they get disjointed flashbacks. Don't be afraid.
It's not memories, Sintas said. I can see flashes of light.
Jaina felt genuine elation. It sounded as if the impulses to the optic nerve were getting through again.
How many sessions might this take?
I don't know, Gotob said.
He took one hand off Sintas's forehead and moved the lamp closer to her.
I've never healed a Kifar before.
Sintas flinched.
I can see the contrast.
She rubbed her eyes, straining, and turned to the lamp.
I can see light and dark.
Jaina tempered her own excitement with the reminder that if Sintas's memory came back, it wouldn't be quite as welcome. Gotob seemed to be flagging. Venku took the old man's elbow and steered his hand back to his side.
Enough for tonight, Buir, he said.
Jaina knew he wasn't really Venku's father, but she wasn't sure if the term was simply respect or an indication of adoption.
Let's get some rest. We have a long way to go.
Medrit gave Venku a package as he left, a bundle of packets that looked like an assortment of meat and preserves. Mandalore was still a hungry place to live.
I'm sure Fett will be grateful, he said. No need.
Gotob headed for the door, leaning on Venku's arm.
It's for Sintas Vel, not him. And don't feel so bad about never finding us when Fett sent you after the clone with gray gloves. Jang is an expert at covering his tracks. The best there is, as are we.
Bevine listened to the speeder's drive fade into the night.
I think I scared them off, he said. I don't know if they'll come back.
Jaina lay awake that night, wondering what would happen when it got around, as things seemed to do here, about Gotab and Venku. Had either of them had kids? Were there force-sensitive Mandalorians everywhere? It was all getting complicated, and making her mind race when she needed to sleep, and to concentrate on making the most of the training time she had with Fett. Sound carried a long way in the quiet night, and she could hear some celebration still in progress at Levitt's farm a little way down the dirt road. Revelers were laughing raucously, and she was on the point of storming over there through the field and snarling at them to shut up so she could get some sleep, just like a Mondo woman would. Then there was a sudden, complete silence, before a lone male voice, a surprisingly sweet tenor, began singing a slow ballad with the kind of perfect top notes that caught her off guard and made her throat ache and her eyes fill with tears for no reason. One by one, other voices joined in until it was a choir. Jaina couldn't understand a word of it, except for Mondo Ade and Mondayayim. It still transfixed her. She held her breath. The chorus repeated twice, and then the voices trailed off one by one to leave the solo tenor to fade into silence. The song spoke to her of yearning for home, and loves left waiting for the warrior's return. She was having trouble fighting back incipient tears. She made her way downstairs and found Bevine pottering around the kitchen doing chores in total silence.
"You're very stealthy," she whispered. "I didn't know you were awake."
"Singing," he said. "I'm not a heavy sleeper. It's my suspicious nature."
"Yeah, I heard it too. It was absolutely beautiful. Is it a love song? It sounds so lonely and longing."
Bevine stifled a laugh.
"It roughly translates as, nobody likes us, but we don't care because we're Mondos, and we're the best. Sorry to spoil the illusion, but we do have our mournful ballads."
He cocked an ear in the direction of Sintas's room.
"I think she's having nightmares. Whatever Gotab's done, the old neural pathways are connecting again."
Sintas was definitely having nightmares. Jaina listened outside for a while, and then went in to sit with her just in case she woke up screaming. She was thrashing around, muttering incoherently, and the only words Jaina could understand were,
"You could have told them."
Jaina found herself unable to keep her eyes open, and dozed in the chair. She woke with a start. Sintas was sitting up, and it was starting to get light outside.
"Stang,"
Sintas said.
"Daylight. You can see?"
"I can."
"That's excellent news."
Jaina took her hand.
"You were having a nightmare."
"I had a dream, but I don't think it was one. I remembered something. There was a bounty I was hunting, but I ended up being grabbed, and there was this Barv saying I'd be worth something for ransom, and he shot me full of some sedative or other."
"Someone who knew you were Fett's ex-wife?"
"Bo. Oh, Stang, it's coming back. Bo never took kindly to anyone messing with me, even after we split up. Then there was... Oh, Aelin... No!"
Jaina braced for some trauma to emerge. Just ending up in carbonite would have been enough, but she had all the bounty hunter baggage, plus Fett, and then a dead daughter.
"Hey, take it easy."
"She was so excited. I said I'd be back from the job in time to take her to Coruscant, see the big city, buy her some nice things.
Aelin had been about 16. Carbonite and fate had wiped out the best part of 40 years and a family lifetime that could have been. Sintas seemed as tough as old boots, but tears were now streaming down her face.
"Oh,"
she said,
"he shot someone."
That didn't narrow it down much. Jaina handed her a cloth to wipe her face.
"Maybe you need some meds to slow all this down a little."
"No, no, I need to remember this. I need to."
Sintas put her hand to her mouth.
"Aelin, and then Myrta. Whatever did I say that made her go and do all that? I never told her about it. We never talked. I never told her why Beau and I divorced."
"Myrta thought he abandoned you."
It was definitely none of Jaina's business, and she shouldn't have said it. Too late now.
"Aelin blamed his not being around for your, well, death."
"I know, but look, Beau was exiled for murder. It wasn't like that. It was much more complicated."
Jaina preferred Fett's more succinct analyses. He'd left her, and he obviously felt bad about the effect it had on her. It sounded pitifully small and domestic, the kind of stuff the divorce lawyers thrived on, not the catalyst for a vendetta on Aelin's scale that ended up with Jason killing her. But Sintas was getting increasingly distraught as memories were starting to connect. She seemed to have a much more complicated recollection of the breakdown of their marriage. So the law had caught up with Fett at least once in his life. All that surprised Jaina was that he'd been caught at all. But he'd always have his reasons. She knew that by now.
"I think I'd better go and get Myrta," Jaina said.
"No, please. Not yet. You look like a sympathetic person who understands how families can tear themselves apart."
They said Kiphar people were psychic. They weren't wrong there. Sintas had the Solos and Skywalkers down pat.
"Okay," said Jaina. "But I still think I should go get your granddaughter."
"Not yet,"
Sintas said.
"I need to work out how I'm going to explain this to her. That her grandfather was exiled for killing the man who raped me. His superior officer."